the microphone is working. We're going to go ahead and get the meeting started here. I may be gavel-less, but I am going to... Oh, I am not gavel-less anymore. I have all the accessories. So, we are calling the meeting to order here. Thank you to everybody for attending. So, beginning with following the agenda, I guess the first step is to approve the agenda. Everybody have a chance to look at it. It's relatively simplistic as far as agendas go. So any opposition to approving the agenda? All right, agenda approved. Next, I will do the approval of the minutes. We have a relatively thick packet here, and part of that is because there are a lot of minutes in there. There were a lot of things said at last meeting, so the minutes are longer than normal. Did anybody have any comments or concerns about the minutes as written that they did not already provide to John via email earlier today? Is this mic working? Is there a volume control that I need to be?
I'm trying to turn up the volume. You may want to snag.
I don't know if this mic works any better. Okay. We'll do what we can here. We'll yell at each other nicely. Okay, so the minutes that are in the packet, all kinds of fun sound effects. The minutes that are in the packet, any concerns that anybody wants to bring up about the way they are written as of right now? Lorraine? Anything else on the minutes? Okay, all in favor of approving the minutes? Any opposition? Any abstentions?
Oop.
Valid point. Okay, thank you, Sitsa.
I abstained because I was not here.
Right, and abstaining? Okay, so two abstentions, otherwise all approve. All right, I am next going to open it to public comments. So if those of you, I don't know if anybody has signed up in advance for public comment. I'm not sure if you were holding up a hand or telling me that was four people. Okay, excellent. Well, four fingers does usually mean that. Okay, so I will start with Chris Barnes. And if you would come up to the table, find yourself an open mic, hopefully one that is working well.
Nice to see a crowded table, even though we're down seven members. Hi, my name is Chris Barnes. Most of you know me, but for those who don't, I used to be on the RAC, and now I continue to bug you guys. I want to speak briefly about the RAC. Like I said, you're still short seven members. This is the third full meeting of the year. That's a whole quarter of the year gone to get things done. You have other members who still need to be renewed. Jack Evans says that the RAC is not going away. I will take him at his word, so I'm sure later we'll find out what is in store for the RAC. But I wanted to mention that the problems on the RAC are not just with RAC members. It also starts with the board and with staff. It's my understanding the RAC was not asked about the upcoming options for the Grosvenor turnback changes. That's a change that affects riders. I understand it affects the bottom line at Metro, and there are politicians involved, but that's a change that affects riders, and this is where that change needs to be discussed prior to being put into board documents. And it's my understanding that didn't happen. We need the RAC. Please don't cut the RAC. 21 members is a little unwieldy, but they all have lives. And to get 15 or 18 people here is good. So 21 is a good number. Keep that number. Don't cut the RAC. Fill the positions, please. Thank you.
All right, Steve Caffin.
Hi, Steve Caffin, and I'm on the AAC, but I'm
I'm here as an individual, and I live off DuPont Circle in the Northwest. Two things I'd like to speak to, and that relates to buses. You know, we know there's going to be a review of bus routes with the, you know, looking at efficiency and productivity and also looking at cost. And I would hope that during this, as part of this review, we see to what extent we can work with the circulated routes to provide, let's say, coverage that may need to be cut or might be cut or can provide more seamless coverage. And I'm thinking, for example, there's a circulator bus DuPont Roslyn, but the way that's configured, that never quite gets to DuPont Circle, and it's about as close to Farragut North. Just by altering that route somewhat and moving it closer to DuPont Circle, we might provide coverage that might be taken away by this review. So I hope we keep that in mind, that we do have some coordination possibilities, even though we're dealing with the DOT versus WMATA. The other thing, and this is quick, is at the same time, I hope the review encompasses obstructions to efficient bus service. I know, for example, where I live, and quite a number of people in my building have complained about it, there are two private bus companies which were placed right at the entrances to DuPont Circle about 3 years ago, towards the end of the Gray administration. These obstruct about five bus lines and cause backups during rush hour of about a block to a block and a half. Plus, they're a bit dangerous for people who don't know the area when they cross. I hope this review of buses will also encompass obstructions that possibly can be cleared to make the buses flow more effectively. Thank you.
Yeah. A quick question. Which you said you're at DuPont Circle. Which exit at the station is being obstructed? Is it the Q Street or the one that's on the circle itself?
Actually, it's both.
Both. Okay.
Just a brief answer, because this is
sure.
We have. I've lived in the area for 13 years, actually. I came from Los Angeles to take the job as the audit director of the Peace Corps. So I'm not a native, but I have been here long enough and have lived in the same building since I arrived in 2003. We've actually had many meetings in our building to try to determine what caused this backup that we see, and it's on two sides. Massachusetts Avenue going into DuPont Circle with a bus line called Best Bus, a private bus company. That obstructs the N2, N4, and N6, and I think the L1. The other one, which is a more dangerous obstruction, is Washington Deluxe. That obstructs if that bus doesn't park directly on the curb, the 42 bus, which is coming from the north into DuPont Circle, can't get through, and it can back up to a block. It's a very simple move to just move these off the main streets, and it'll solve a major traffic jams. I just don't think anybody has taken the initiative to look at it. And, you know, if we're looking at bus productivity, if you will, maybe now's the time also. And I'm sure these are not standalone situations. Is that sufficient for what you need? Thanks.
Thank you very much. And Kathy Welsh. Kathy Welsh.
My name is Kathy Welsh, and my subject is user friendliness when we need Metro. My main concern is the Nats, even though the Nationals aren't the only game and event in town. But I'm real concerned about past, where I've had to make my own arrangements to get home without using Metro, and future. Next month, on April 8th, on a Sunday night, the Nationals have ESPN Game of the Week, which means the game starts at after 8 o'clock Sunday night. I have a season ticket that's probably going wasted because I can't see coming down here for a Sunday night 8 o'clock game start and leaving at 10, which we might be in the fifth inning. The other big concern looming this summer is the All-Star Game and all of its festivities. That stuff is going to start at 8 o'clock or 8:30 on weeknights. And we need to get home. I don't know how many people take Metro home from the games, but I'm not the only one. So we need user-friendliness, availability, I guess is a good word, when we need you. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And Carol Allen.
Hello. This was kind of a last-minute decision today, so I don't have prepared marks. My friend Kathy just spoke. I live in Manassas, Virginia. I traveled to D.C. via Metro from Vienna to downtown Washington for work every single day. My concern is similar to what Kathy just described. We're going to have the All-Star Game here from, I think, July. The events start like Sunday night for the home run hitting contest. The 13th, I believe. No, I got to get my dates right. Through the 17th, there are events every single night. There's probably going to be bars open all over the place every night. We cannot have, I personally cannot leave work at 10th and Penn, go all the way back to Vienna, and drive in for any of the Nationals events or any of the All-Star events. I go straight from work to the All-Star events. So, you know, closing at even midnight or on a Sunday night when the home run hitting contest is going to be about, it usually starts about 8:30 at night. It's going to go late because they go four or five rounds. I need a way home, and I get here via Metro every day, and I go home by Metro every day. And there ought to be enough people using Metro late those days to be able to certainly make up for any overtime costs or anything like that. So that's my main concern, is because, you know, not only Washingtonians are coming here, but Mariner fans from Seattle are coming here. L.A. fans are coming from L.A., New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore.
Thank you very much.
Everybody's coming here.
Appreciate your comments, everybody. Any other public comments in the room that have not signed up officially? I see we have a RAC comment.
Yeah, I know Metro is suspending scheduled maintenance for that day in particular, those days, the 13th through the 17th, that All-Star week. So maybe it's worth considering. I don't know if they've considered extending the hours, but just for consideration.
Okay.
You know, I know most nights we close at whatever time is fine. My main concern is these special events to be open late when we need you. Actually, my solution is I'm not asking the entire system to stay open. All of the other trains from Shady Grove and whatever make their last runs on time. We just need to be open so we can get home from the game or the event we're at when it's needed. And my solution, I don't know how many people will agree with me, but since we can, the computer's set for rush and non-rush, let us that are need the system help, say, make program the machine for rush hour plus $3. That'll help offset, because those of us that are using it can help pay for it at least a little.
Thank you.
But again, my main concern is being open late or early when you have a special thing that we need you for. Thank you.
Thank you. And we've got a couple of board members here who have heard all of those comments, so that's always helpful. Speaking of those board members, I would imagine that most of us around the table know Kathy Porter and Christian Dorsey, but in case you don't, they're the ones sitting at the other end of the table there. A couple of board members who are overseeing this operational review that the RAC is in the midst of. And Christian's got some orchestral background music along with his entrance. So I will go ahead and turn it over to the two of y'all to give us whatever information you want to provide, and then I know the big point of this evening is to have a bit of a discussion. So go ahead.
Watching and streaming. So thank you, Catherine, for that introduction, and it's good to be with all of you. We had a wonderful opportunity to prepare for and sort of frame this conversation last week with a meeting with a phone meeting with Catherine and Colin and Bob and Sitza and Lorraine. I believe you were all of the members of the RAC leadership who were on it. And we very much appreciate that opportunity to think about this, because we recognize that probably from our point, the way this operational review has sort of been rolled out has not been a demonstration of the most coherent way to go about trying to do something that is very serious. And I want to first, just on behalf of the Board Business Oversight Committee, they've appointed a task force of which Kathy and I are part. Paul Smedberg, who would like to be with us tonight, cannot due to some other responsibilities, but he is with us in spirit. And I just want to say at the very outset, because it'll color the rest of the conversation if we don't get this out of the way first, there is no desire to dissolve the RAC, period, full stop. What we are, though, is considering a lot of different things that we heard through the public comment and that we saw through the responses to the SWOT analysis that in some ways, I guess, started this conversation going that Jack Evans sent out. We have come to understand that there are a few key issues that we want to try and address, and all of them combine to bring us to this somewhat of an inflection point where we want to figure out how to do this comprehensively and have an operational review of how to make the RAC as valued and as valuable as we think it is. And I just want to be very clear about that. The idea of the RAC when it was formed in 2005, in my opinion, and I think Kathy shares this, remains as significant. To explore any and all avenues to make sure that we have constructive rider input and engagement. Now, even though we have lots of different communications vehicles that weren't around in 2005, the key part of that is any and all. And this, to me, is a very important way to bring people together in an engaged way, not just simply point in time responses, to have people work through deliberatively, thinking about various issues and concerns from a rider perspective. So there is no desire to get rid of that, but we do need to make sure it works better for a variety of reasons. And you know, the basic reason is, look, you know, the RAC at this point, 13 years old, is, if we anthropomorphize it, it's at its adolescence. And, you know, there's no way that you would think that an adolescent has the same needs and should be structured and dealt with in the same way as something that was created in its infancy. So this is perhaps a really good time to think about it comprehensively. And some of the specific areas that are definitely causing us to do this now are the turnover that was mentioned by one of the public commenters. That's got to be something that is difficult for the RAC to deal with. It's also very difficult from a staff perspective because staff has to recruit those vacancies, recruit to fill those vacancies. And this provides an opportunity to figure out a couple of key different things, whether we are right-sized, whether the jurisdictional distribution still makes sense. These are not resolved answers to these questions yet, but worth examining. Whether or not we have the right tools for actually recruiting people to it, whether the terms make sense, all of these things should be considered in light of the attrition, which is pretty severe in terms of this body's ability to operate efficiently. We also have a related issue when it comes to staffing. You know, whenever we have a turnover in the staff coordinator, we basically have the pipeline for the RAC kind of grinding to a halt. And we have to ask, well, is that a sustainable model? And then B, and this is most important, historically, or at least recently during the time that we've been that I've been around, the RAC has had WMATA staff that has been responsive to it. And, you know, we certainly think that that makes sense, right? You need someone to actually staff the RAC. However, that staff coordinator has been responsible to the general manager and the hierarchy of WMATA staff. Yet the RAC is an advisory body to the board. We've got an internal governance issue in terms of figuring out actually how that works. Because if we think about it in the abstract, the general manager is not board resolved or authorized to in any way act on recommendations from the RAC other than however they may see fit to operationalize the output. The relationship is between the RAC and the board. Yet we've had this mismatch where we've had the staffing coming from the GM and the hierarchy at WMATA. This is not something that is, this sounds a lot more dire than it is, but it just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And we haven't been very clear about who drives the agenda of staff when in fact the general manager has his plan, he's responsive to the board, the RAC is supposed to be responsive to the board, and we've never really been clear about how that all ought to work. And then, you know, certainly I think Kathy and I have talked about this and other people as well. We want to make sure that this is not just something that we have on paper to make ourselves feel good. Hey, we've got customer input. We've got a RAC. It's all good. Public engagement needs to be meaningful. And it really can't be meaningful if the work that you do is not directed towards some outcome, doesn't have some output. And part of what the board has been doing recently is a continuing sense of its own self-evaluation. And one of the things that we have been honest with ourselves with is that we have not done a very good job. In fact, we've done a poor job of having a relationship with the RAC where we collaborate on a work plan that aligns with what the board is interested in having you advise us on, and then providing the resources to make sure that gets done. Effectively, the RAC has been left to its own devices to come up with what it's going to do and what it's going to talk about. And there's this hope, this magical hope, that somehow somebody who's a decision maker will read it and act upon it. That's really stupid. We want to make sure we have an engagement pipeline that actually makes sense so that everything that you engage in is actually reflective of what are the needs of the board, and that the board is fully engaged with you in that work, and then that when you complete it or that when you're in the process of doing it, the board is actually involved as well to act as it may need to. So with all of that as sort of preamble, a couple of items that we've identified as meriting further discussion, and I want to be very clear, part of the reason we're here tonight is because we want this to be a collaborative process. We don't want this task force to just go in a room, come up with a bunch of things, and then say, here, deal with it. We think in order for this to work well, this has to be something that we sort of bubble up together. But here are some of the items that I think are worthy of being discussed. You know, chief among all of these is how we fix the communications issues between the RAC and the board, how we define that relationship, how we actually influence the development of a RAC work plan at the very beginning of the year that aligns with where the board would like to see the RAC go over the year, and that we think about that constructively and deliberately, and it's not just a pro forma exercise. Also on the table should be the whole notion of standing committees. You know, the RAC, statutorily, you have these standing committees, which you have to conduct, but at the same time, if they're not aligned with a work plan that makes sense with the board, does that make any sense? Should we reconsider the whole notion of a standing committee for a body that's supposed to be sort of nimble enough to develop annual work plans that make sense? The staff coordinator position, you know, clearly, as I outlined what some of the issues were there, pursuing a different model for how WMATA goes about staffing the RAC. The annual work plan itself, it's my understanding, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but you all kind of do that work plan, you send it to us, and we approve it. Some of us read it, most of us don't, and that's it, right? Well, that's really a fatal flaw that we need to fix, and we have to figure out how to make sure that there is an ongoing way for that work plan to be reflected in something that is going to make your engagement meaningful. So with that, there are a lot of different ideas and ways that we could go about dealing with those big issues, and we want to make a collaborative approach to doing so. The timeline and the next steps that we've identified, and we did this last week on the call, to really take a couple of months, but there are a few key things that we'll need to do, come up with ways of addressing all of those issues, and then revising the bylaws and the enabling resolution to the RAC to reflect whatever changes that we come up with. And then both the RAC and the board will have to approve these, and we're hoping that we can do this expeditiously sometime over the next couple of months in April and May, by May at the latest, I think. We're going to aim for April, right?
Yeah. Sure. I mean, to the extent that we can control what the board does.
That's right. But we recognize also that you all have suspended effectively the way that you have been operating, so the sooner that we resolve all of this and give everyone a new way forward, the better for everyone. So we're not going to try and drag this out, but as Ms. Porter mentioned, sometimes best intentions get overwhelmed by other events. But I'll turn it over to Kathy.
Well, thank you, and I really appreciate your inviting us here. As Christian said, we very much intend for this to be a collaborative process. I'm actually one of the longer serving board members. I've actually been on the board for 7 years, representing Montgomery County in Maryland. Before that, I was mayor of the city of Tacoma Park for a number of years and also sat on the Transportation Planning Board. I don't know how well you know the Transportation Planning Board, but they have a advisory committee also. And we work very closely with the advisory committee. I work very closely with the advisory committee. And after I left the Transportation Planning Board, I actually worked with the TPB staff in putting together their leadership institutes, transportation-related and planning-related leadership institutes, and we had several members of the CAC go through those leadership institutes, and they were, it was very helpful to have people who were that invested and that knowledgeable work with the TPB. And I have great hope that the RAC can be that to the board. I know that you all have been frustrated. I want to thank you for the work that those of you who answered the SWOT analysis put into doing that. I read all of them, and it comes across very clearly from what you all wrote that there are a couple of big issues. But it seems to me the overriding one from both the RAC's perspective and from the board's perspective is communication. I mean, we are not telling you what we need, and you are not getting feedback to what you give us. And I think both of those things need to be corrected. There needs to be a much closer working relationship so that you feel that the work that you do is valued and it plugs into things that the board's doing. As you may know, the board has gone through a reorganization of its own over the past several months, which went through fits and starts, as these things always do. But it ended up with the board having fewer committees, each board member having only one committee, and our choosing to focus, each board member focus more deeply on a single subject. So I know how these kinds of, I know how reorganizations can seem kind of daunting at the beginning, and how, but how they can be very useful when you finally work them through. And so I have really high hopes that we can have a process like that, where we come up with something that is more satisfying from you all, your end, and also more useful to the board. And the reason Christian and I are here is because we do want to make this a collaborative process. This has got to be, you know, two-way. We have some ideas. We can bring ideas from the board, but we also need your ideas and your input, and your working with us to make this process work. So that's why we're here, and I would be really interested in your ideas.
Thank you both. Also, one other point of clarification that came up in our last conversation with y'all on the board. For those of you who are unofficial right now, unofficial board members, the intention is that we will go ahead and reappoint you, ideally at this March full board meeting. Yep. That's a relatively easy thing to do. We won't be reappointing brand new members until we figure out whatever's happening here. But the reappointments will go ahead and happen, especially given that y'all have continued to attend and continue to be engaged. Might as well make it real. I was sort of surprised the question tense had not gone up yet, so. Y'all know the drill, so we'll start up, starting the seats then.
Sure. Thank you. And thank you again both for joining us. Just sort of following up from on Catherine's question, what do you think the ideal size of the rack is, and what have you discussed, or what are your thoughts about sort of the way the rack is composed, its membership structure? I would love to hear more of your thoughts.
I mean, we can opine at this point. You know, these are just thoughts, and in no way are these things that I'm seeking to have imposed on the final outcome. But, you know, when I look at a body of 21, that's probably a little large, just to manage generally, but I don't know if there's a magic number there. You know, we're talking 18, 15, you know, I don't know. To me, that's not the most important characteristic. It's figuring out how to make the body actually functional. And I think part of what may make it a bit of a challenge is that, you know, recruitment tends to be driven by geography to fill these particular slots that we have, as opposed to focusing on the transit experiences that we desire to have at the table to inform the Metro Board and Metro's activities. And I'm keen to explore what it would be like to sort of de-link home origin as the primary driver of representing the RAC versus what is your transit experience. Obviously, with that, we want regional diversity, but, you know, I do ask myself at the end of the day, if someone lives in Virginia and commutes from Tyson to Ballston, is that any different than someone who lives in Ballston and commutes to Metro Center? You know, probably not. So, you know, do we want to make the RAC have a challenge with recruitment because we're trying to fill these geographic holes, or do we want to make sure it's reflecting all of the transit experiences that the system offers?
Yeah, I would agree that I'm not starting with a number. I'm really, to me, the key seems to be the communication possibility and talking about how the board and the RAC work together, and whatever number we end up with, that would be the right number. But I'm sort of not starting with that. I would like to see a structure built on the communication proposition, not the other way around.
Colin?
So that makes a lot of sense to me. I think you all have, I want to thank you for your thoughtful consideration of our feedback. I mean, it sounds like you've definitely heard us, and you've honed in on, you know, some of the key issues that I think everyone around this table agrees are sort of holding the RAC back. And I think communication is certainly, you know, paramount among them. And I think we do need to work together to figure out how the RAC and board can be more responsive to one another and collaborative and, you know, working along parallel tracks, so to speak. So, you know, perhaps there may be, you know, regular opportunities for our respective committees to have, you know, joint in-person interactions around, you know, issues that you know, that overlap on our work plans. But I, you know, I also think that we need to figure out how we can, to the degree possible, formalize some responsiveness on the staff's part to both the board and the RAC as we, you know, seek to accomplish our respective missions. I think one of the things that we've long had trouble with is getting, you know, basic information about a given issue or policy. And, you know, it's been, from my perspective, much harder than it ought to be for a public agency to get a clear understanding of, you know, what the policies and procedures are as they are currently on the books, which makes it, you know, very difficult for us to make informed recommendations to you all. I think, you know, it's also true that we have at times been blindsided by policy changes, as I think a couple of folks have alluded to. It's you know, transparency in the development of new policies has been a problem, and I think, you know, we would like to work with you all to find, you know, to develop a process whereby we are engaged with both the board and the staff as those policies are being conceptualized, rather than simply reacting to them after they've been developed.
Can I ask a follow-up question?
Sure.
How much do you know, and at what point in time, about the agendas of board committees? Because most of our work is done in committees. Do you get those agendas? I know that they become public usually the beginning of the week of the board meeting. Do you get those at that point? Do you know what's on what the board committee's topics they're talking about?
I mean, they were not forwarded to us. I mean, they're you know, made available via the website, and so, you know, it would be you know, incumbent on us to seek them out via the website. But there's no sort of heads up provided to the RAC, and so, I mean, I know that may be a starting point, is to say, you know, here are the things that we anticipate working on. You know, what would you like to, you know, provide, you know, input on?
Because
as the RAC chair, I don't always even know when the board meetings are. When the board meetings change times.
Oh, you mean the formal board meeting itself? I know.
Yes.
I noticed other people have said that, and it's basically the board meetings are set at the convenience of the board. I don't know how else to explain it. And there's some days that it's more convenient one time than another. But can I hone on this, because it seems to me that there is a big opportunity here. The board does most of its, you know, work in committees. And so if you all sort of aren't aware of what we're proposing to talk about in committees, I can see that they're, you know, I can't think of any policies that we develop, you know, out of public view. I mean, we go through, sometimes we beat them to death, but, you know, we go through a lot of discussion, and we'll have budget discussions, we'll have discussions about this thing, but most of those things are in committees. Now, there's some things that have, of necessity, end up having to be out of public view, personnel issues, and the like. But that might be an area that we could, you know, bring you closer into what the board is doing. And I know most of you all have day jobs, and most of the committee meetings are during the day. But maybe there's a way we can figure out to have you more knowledgeable ahead of time about what's going on, and figure out a way to, if you have thoughts or ideas, that either before or after, we could plug those in. I'm just throwing that out.
That would be great. I mean, I can give a couple of examples of policies that sort of caught us off guard. So, for example, the recent change to, you know, the refund policy, which, you know, on the one hand, we were glad to see a move in that direction, but we didn't, you know, there was no engagement of the RAC in the development of that policy. Another would be, you know, the change to the being able to exit with a negative fare and the implications that has for riders as they're, you know, unable to use credit cards in order to, you know, get that exit fare. And then, of course, this recent change to turnaround. So, I mean, those are just a couple of examples, but I mean, it's I think representative of a longer pattern.
A couple of thoughts about that. I mean, on those two examples that you cite, join the club. I think we got about the same notice that you did.
So let's fix
those,
that.
Those were actually administrative policies. Those were actually administrative policies. I mean, the board wouldn't really probably set something like that. It's more a way of sort of operationalizing. And we have been trying not to get into the weeds on some of those things.
But
and
those
so
things
we,
that affect riders directly.
Yeah. No. I'm not negating what you're saying. I'm just saying that the board may not be the entree into some of those things.
Sure. So what we need then is a mechanism for staff to be more responsive to the ridership via the RAC.
Well, I mean, there's a couple things, Colin. Not that I disagree with anything, but it's going to be a little bit harder to realize the outcomes that you desire, given the few things that would need to happen. One, let's be frank, there's going to need to be a culture change where we recognize all of the assets that we have at the table and include them with the heads up and the coordination and collaboration when necessary. This is not a problem that only exists at WMATA. As someone who's in local government in Virginia, frequently you pursue things and then realize after the fact, oh my goodness, we could have consulted or included this group in this effort and conversation. It doesn't excuse it, but it's a very difficult thing to actually operationalize so that it's fail-safe and that you never mess up. But we need to have a different spirit with the way we approach it. The staff issue is really going to be a tough one, and I know that Kathy and I are probably going to need to work with the board to really figure out how to solve that, because we do have a problem in the sense that any information that WMATA has ought to be able to be delivered to you swiftly and easily. That's what you want that staff coordinator to be able to do. If the work has been done and you need to access it, that person needs to have the skills, capability, and responsibility to actually get it for you. They need to be a facilitator. They need to be skilled and capable at that with no organizational restrictions. So we've got to figure out that piece. But then there's the other piece that is really the gray area. To what extent does staff take direction to do work from the RAC? And that's the area that I think we as a governance body need to really take ownership of, because there really is no mechanism for the staff to take direction from the RAC except for when they feel like, okay, yeah, it makes sense within my work plan. You think about it just from a job description and an organizational hierarchy standpoint, usually people don't have the ability to, on their own initiative, say, yes, I will commit to doing this work for the RAC without clearing it with the supervisor and getting the okay, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got to figure out how to properly staff and resource the RAC and make very clear that we expect that work that has already been produced, that is simply a matter of bringing it to the RAC in a way that is useful for you all to discuss and deliberate, that ought to happen extremely quickly without unnecessary delay. But then we also have to figure out, how do we go about directing work to be done? And who does that? And how do we resource that? Those are larger questions that'll be a little bit more difficult.
I appreciate that. And I'll let others talk, but yeah. The last thing I'll say is that we have sort of been promised this culture change towards greater transparency and rider engagement for some time now, since we've gotten a new GM, and we haven't seen it. Okay. So we need to figure out how to do that.
Thank you. Okay.
The RAC, as it is right now, is all bark, and there's little of it, and it needs teeth. You need to find a way to formalize the actions that it does, that it actually has some force to compel action. Now, that may not necessarily mean enacting policy, but to sort of say, if, as a body, we vote on something and we want to have this move forward to require or inquire and get this information from staff, that is not a question of this needing to have to go up to board approval. That we can just initiating to. And the same similar ways, coming back down, that the board fully incorporates the RAC in the work that it's doing and sort of the policies and initiatives that it's reviewing, that as part of the process incorporates passing the review of the RAC as the advisory body to the board, rather than it just being something that it's an entity that exists out there that we can occasionally engage with if need be. In terms of some of the comments that are coming around, I think it wouldn't be a bad idea to sort of say if we align the subcommittees of the RAC to the committees of the board, that whoever the chair is for that committee also conferences in to those meetings, so that way they're on the same page and having that information, and they could also potentially be on the board agenda, the RAC section for whatever it is for safety, the RAC section for whatever it is for customer service. I think that'll be something really helpful in terms of relaying that information. But I do think you have to get back to the point where which, as part of board operations, it fully incorporates RAC feedback as part of that process. Because as it is right now, it's a body that exists that can advise and make recommendations, but it goes nowhere beyond that. And until that changes, you're going to have high turnover because people are going to feel as if they come and they dedicate however many hours a month, and nothing ever happens from it. They work on these plans, and it goes nowhere. They submit information for questions, and they don't hear a response for it. So until there's a formal process that incorporates what the board is doing and even the request that the RAC makes, people are going to feel as if they're going to dedicate whatever amount of time, and then it goes nowhere, that they can better off spend their time doing something else.
You talked about RAC members at board meetings. Can RAC members take the time during the workday to attend more board committee meetings?
Well, I mean, if you formalize it into the positions themselves, and sort of when we do our elections, you outline them and said, hey, if you want to volunteer to be the vice chair, like the chair of the safety committee, this also entails having to attend or conference into those morning questions. It allows the RAC to self-select and sort of say, like, well, I can't commit to that. I work behind a deep fryer or something, or I can commit to that. I have an office time to do that. So if you formalize that into the roles themselves, then people will gravitate to whether or not they're able to do that in the first place.
Okay.
Deb. Thank you both again for being here. Really appreciate it. I just want to talk about, I wish I had brought the bylaws with me, but in the bylaws, it's very clear, and it says over and over again, it talks about the RAC advising the board and staff. It doesn't just say the board. It says board and staff over and over and over again, board and staff. And already tonight, I've heard that already get dropped, and now it's the board and the RAC, RAC and the board and the RAC, RAC and the board. In essence of time, I don't want to give all my concerns about why I think that the staff still needs to be part of that communication. I want to give everybody else a chance to speak as well, but I think it even touched on it just a moment ago, Ms. Porter, when you were talking about the administrative operational side kind of, you know, with, and I think that's why it's important for the board and the staff and the RAC to be working together. I would hate to see you mentioned revising the bylaws. I would hate to see the staff being pulled out of a relationship with the RAC along with the board, because the board, as directors and politicians, and that's not a four-letter word, but you guys have some really, really big headache things that you deal with all the time. And the staff also, and that's why you guys interact operationally, politically, funding, dealing with, you know, people jumping on tracks and all these different things. And I think that the RAC is much more, and I've seen much more involvement from the staff this year. I think Mr. Whitfield has promoted that. However, as Colin said, some of the communication just didn't really follow through. So I guess I just wanted to state that I hope that the bylaws and the RAC's advisability would still be maintained with the board and staff, and you have to visit how that would work best. But I guess my question is, when you were talking about revising the bylaws, is that on the table to remove the staff completely out of the RAC involvement?
Yeah, since I spoke to this, thank you, Deb. Absolutely not. The places in the bylaws where staff are mentioned, in some cases it appears as if staff and board are co-equal, but then the bylaws get very specific, and when you go back to the founding bylaws before they were revised, it's also very clear that it's an advisory committee to the board. And from a governance perspective, it makes sense. The board gets its advice from this body, and the board has the only staff that the board has under its purview are the inspector general, the board corporate secretary and her staff, and the general manager. That's our staff. So when we talk about board and staff, it's really that's who's responsive to the RAC, not everyone who works in the WMATA organization. So that's what I'm talking about cleaning up, to figure out how we actually align the resources that are under our operational control to actually serve the RAC, while recognizing that what you all desire and need frequently are to hear from frontline staff who we don't direct. So, you know, technically from a governance perspective, you want to talk about abilities ride, you know, we can't ask that person. The board does not have a direct relationship to say, okay, we need that person to devote X number of hours to this RAC project. That's a totally different governance regime, and fixing that up so that it makes a little bit more sense, I think, is well worth this effort. So that's what I was talking about from a bylaws revision. Right. In no way can the RAC actually function without having staff support, not just from the coordinator's perspective, but from getting briefed and information and discussion.
Right, and just a quick follow-up. That was very good to clarify what staff reports to you and that involvement. That's very good to know. But you mentioned frontline staff, and I think really where I personally find some of my frustrations when we see things and we want to make the board aware of them, and it's really the executive staff that we really sometimes, I think, need to collaborate with, frontline staff, they're the operation, but they're not the ones who pull the strings on how the operations go, so to say. And so we have tried to engage executive staff to some degree of success and not. So it would be good when you're reviewing how to review the RAC and where things go, if we could figure out where that fits in, or maybe it doesn't. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Paul.
Thank you for coming again. Try that again. I had a couple quick points. One is the process during the time that we are kind of in waiting. There are two things that are happening as a result of that. One is the subcommittees, as you said, don't meet, but there's still going to be issues and things for them to discuss. Like, there's still going to be safety issues in the next 2 months. There's still going to be customer service issues in the next 2 months. Of course, people could any two people could individually meet about customer service issues. I mean, you're not telling people not to discuss that. But those issues, though, the board responsiveness on those issues just isn't going to be there, or it's almost like we're being asked to suspend, but the rest of the world is going to go on. So I don't know how I'm not on a customer service, I'm not on safety, but, I mean, you could say that about any committee, that the world still goes on, so we're not going to be fulfilling our mission during the particular period. So that's a little bit of an issue. I don't know who made the choice to suspend that was, but that's just something to consider.
And thank you. Nice beret, by the way. I like
it. Oh, it's a Kangol hat.
Nice Kangol. Nice.
All right. Beautiful. I thought I mentioned my new shirt, by the way. Go to the...
Very good.
Good shirt.
Very good.
Good shirt.
We like it.
Is that some of that M gear? Yes.
But to the substance of your question, you know, you're totally right. The world has not suspended while the RAC is going through this period. But the practical reality, it's no more complicated than this. The two people who are staffing the RAC over there have other jobs with a lot of other stuff to do. We can't afford to have them staff all of the activities that the RAC was doing before. So it's just strictly a function of the resources that we have at hand. And that's just a practical limitation. The practical limitation is doing this. Otherwise, you know, we'd lose people that we don't want to lose.
I do believe in some sort of committee structure. I don't know if it's going to be the same committees that we have, but, you know, some things I'm not personally, good at, and other things I'm I mean, you can say about anyone that there might be, like, for some issues I don't think about as much as others. I joined the RAC for ABC reasons and not XYZ, so having some sort of a committee structure is helpful. I'm not saying it's the, you know, the committees that we have are the best or not, but having some sort of subject matter expertise is very, very critical for our development and also for outreach. Another point I wanted to make is with the I understand the issue with the staff. They I don't know how you guys address that. It's the issue, like every board that it runs an organization where the board members have other jobs, that's going to be incumbent everywhere you see it, that the staff, they work. WMATA pays, you know, puts food on their table. WMATA does not put food on my table. So my priorities are going to be different, or in somebody who sees, someone who works on staff might say, why do I have to listen to Paul Meisner? Paul Meisner is not on my org structure. Paul Meisner is not the one who puts food on my table. Paul Wiedefeld is. So I'm going to listen to Paul Wiedefeld before I listen to Paul Meisner. And I think that's, or even, hate to say it, Mr. Dorsey. I mean, they look at the staff structure as what's going to be more important. That's going to drive the priorities, not what a rider or what even a board member, sorry to say, thinks. So I don't know how you, my heart kind of goes out to you guys on that, but that's just an issue every board is going to have to deal with. I don't know if you guys have talked about it in your board meetings, though, or amongst yourselves on how to address that cultural issue.
Well, I'm going to opine quickly and then turn it over to someone who's a lot more experienced in thinking about this than I am, but generally it is an existential problem that you get no matter what, but the key to it, the solution to it, is actually being very clear about what your governance responsibilities are. Staff has no obligation to take direction from the board if the board is directing them in areas that are the purview of staff through the general manager to execute. And that issue is a governance issue, not, you know, staff looking at, well, who's my boss and who am I going to listen to? It's a matter of proper governance. And if you stay in your, the colloquial expression, staying in your lane, it makes this a lot easier. Not to say that the RAC has strayed from its lane, but we haven't given you any lanes, and that's our fault. And what we need to do is come up with what are the areas that we actually want you to work in, that you tell us you want to work in, and then I think we have less of that, because then you know that the work that you do is work that we've consulted and collaborated on and said, yes, we want you to do it. So it does have an outlet. It will be considered. Will it always be what your recommendation is? Of course not. We're all grown-ups, but you'll know that it informs decision-making. And I think that'll be a huge step forward from where we are now.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would also say that my experience with the staff at Metro is that they're very professional. I mean, they know what their job is. They're very skilled at carrying out their jobs, and so I'm not worried about them not, you know, carrying out the policy of the board and the general direction of the general manager. So I think the key for you in terms of influence is your relationship with the board. I think that is really the communication, the relationship with the board is where I think you can have your greatest input. And the other thing, and I think Christian has mentioned this, is that, you know, the WMATA is in a situation right now where we are desperately trying to get dedicated funding out of the three legislatures. And, you know, it looks like we're really close in Maryland and Virginia, across all of our fingers and toes. And I think the district, if that happened, I think the district would be happy to go along. But it's been a bit of a slog. I mean, it's been several years, and one of the things that all of the jurisdictions, and I've been at meetings where people from Maryland said this flat out, is they said, if we're going to give you money, you're going to have to streamline your operation, and you're going to have to streamline your staff. And I know since Paul Wiedefeld came in, he's eliminated, what, about 1,000 staff positions. And so there are going to be things that WMATA used to be able to do that they can't do anymore. And the focus has really been on operations and safety and those kinds of things, you know, serving customers. So just in terms of thinking about the way things were and the way things are, they're of necessity going to need to be a little bit different. I mean, it's funny, I was smiling when you began your discussion because you were talking about how hard it is and you don't really feel comfortable with some committees. And we heard that same discussion on the board when we were redoing our committees. People say, wait a minute, I want to be involved in this and this and this, and I don't want to be restricted to one committee. So, I mean, I think anytime you have organizational issues, you have to work through those, and you have to figure out a way to make an organizational work effectively so that it can create the output it needs to create. So I sympathize with those concerns.
Joe. All
right. Thank you, Christian, Kathy, if I could go by first names.
Sure.
I really do appreciate just board members taking the time to just – yeah, be here. I mean, there are a lot of other things that you could be doing, eating with your families, doing things like that.
Christian is with his family.
that's what we expect from board members being able to do it all. But I want to just reiterate that. I guess I came in with a different person. Just, I didn't think it was, obviously it's within the realm of possibility to like eliminate the RAC and go with that drastic action, but it seemed like this was an opening for us to actually stop just the status quo and just to reevaluate and see how it could be more effective. As you acknowledge, it was a bit surprising to all of us, but I think it was necessary. And as you said about streamlining and costs, there are ways that we could be more efficient with dollars and just making sure that we're doing things right, I guess, in terms of that. I was wondering, there are a lot of questions in my mind that I put on paper and I shared with the rest of the REC as well, so I'll just go through some of them. In terms of cost, in terms of streamlining especially, and I know you mentioned the two WMATA staff members as well, or I don't exactly know how many, I think it's just one so far, the staff coordinator according to the bylaws, but there might be a whole bevy of other people supporting that person. How much does it cost for the REC to operate? And how much does it cost for other analogous groups like Amplify or the Youth Advisory Council? And like, how can we, I mean, I'm sure we don't need to have those $5 cookies, even though they're really good, or like the cheese platter or like the broccoli. What are the ways that we can streamline or that the board envisions that we streamline? I'm sure that's not gonna, there's not so much that we could save from that perhaps. Another second question that's more than just that first cost one, and I'll stop because this is my major one. It's just a philosophy of where do the riders fit into this? I know we as a RAC and you as board members and WMATA staff, we all ride Metro in perhaps, but to the extent that riders can be more engaged and we could co-create solutions with riders directly, I know there are things that may not be in the board of directors' vision or plan or in our plan. How can we make sure that the riders are more? When I looked in the bylaws, and that's what I operate from, in my first year, I just went with it, just come to the meetings, do all the things. But as I read the bylaws, there are 8 main responsibilities, roles and responsibilities that are on the first page, and a lot of the things we're not necessarily doing in terms of holding special public forums with special focus on issue, geographical area, location, or targeted group, seeking input. There are a lot of things that so I'm wondering how can we more effectively make sure that it's transparent to riders as well, like on a website? How can we make sure that there are more formal inputs and transparent inputs where if recommendations are made that are still open, that are closed and not implemented, closed and implemented, priority recommendation, how can they be made public so that riders have a say and have input if they can come to these meetings, if they can, you know? So yeah. I just want more writer input, even though we're great, I guess, but there's a lot more writers out there. So, sorry, it's all over the place.
Now, I was just going to say, in terms of the issue of cost, I mean, there's obviously lots of costs to lots of people. I mean, you all are giving all of your time, and that's surely a cost. And we need to create a situation where you feel that you are making good use of your time. So I think that's an issue. In terms of cost to WMATA, I would assume that the biggest cost to WMATA is the staff time that is allocated to doing the coordination with you. I don't know that, I mean, I would hate for you to lose your cookies and the snacks and stuff. I don't think that's going to break us. But
but so. Even in terms of the staff, I love John and just Joe? Joy before. Joe? Okay, just wondering if that was the staff is important. Okay.
Kristen?
Yeah.
Oh.
I didn't know if you had anything you wanted to add to this.
Just a couple things, Joseph. Thank you. No, that element of the RACS conversation or the RACS charge to actually be a convener of broader public opinion, you know, to not just be a group of informed writers, but to actually either spread that or collate information that exists from the broader writer community, I think is an area that should be explored greater. And, you know, I don't necessarily, I'm not suggesting that I want to task the RAC with figuring out how to organize public forums in all of Metro's jurisdictions, but there are other organizations that do that. So, you know, in Virginia, I'm most familiar as a member of the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. You know, in a perfect world, I would love to have someone from the RAC attend those meetings regularly or as needed, because there are public comment periods. We do hear from riders. Transit issues that may be relevant to the RAC are discussed at a different level that may support RAC's activities. We're just not doing a very good job of figuring out how to manage all of the assets that exist out there and coordinate them in a way that makes sense. And that's part of the culture change. Like, have we taken stock of really all that we have and figuring out, okay, how can they all work efficiently and well together? So that, I think this review is a piece of that, but putting in that parking lot, that's greater work that needs to be done comprehensively. And I think there's great value to doing that, because you all know about Metro more than most, yet yet your opinion is considered by some to be equal to anybody who's just had a bad experience and, you know, has a quick access to Twitter. And somehow I'm not suggesting that point in time feedback is not important. It is, but yours is as well. And somehow, some way, I'd like to see that the thought and the time and the effort and the care that you've taken into understanding some of these issues could be more broadly understood in the rider community. So, underexplored area that I would hope that as part of our conversation we figure out a way to maybe make some progress on.
And a point of information for everybody in the room, I intend to wrap this discussion up by 8, because then we do have a discussion to follow about operator announcements and communications procedures, so I don't want to give that short shrift. But for now, Rebecca?
Thank you.
Did they give you the bad microphone?
Thank you.
Is this better? Turn off the other one.
All right, maybe I'll just... Okay, this is good. Thanks to both of you guys for being here and for this very productive conversation. I am encouraged, and I just want to remind you that everyone around this table loves Metro. We want to make it better. We could be true ambassadors and partners in this and improving a system that we all take time out of our lives to be here to improve the rider experience. And we are riders, but we are also members of networks and communities, diverse communities, and you know, national organizations, government agencies. We have partners that we work with in our day jobs that can provide valuable input from the rider's perspective. What we need is that direction from the board, that what we say matters, and that an outreach plan that we develop, because people around this table, we are itching to do outreach to riders. But what I expressed concerns to my colleagues about is I refuse to burn bridges with my partnership organizations, ACLU, Washington Council of Lawyers, AARP. I don't want to burn bridges with people by engaging riders and then providing input that's valuable and having it disregarded. We have a lot of networks that we can turn to, senior buildings, places that riders can get to, not this building. And we are happy to do that on behalf of the RAC. That's why we signed up. But we can't do it if we don't have the trust from the board that what we're doing matters, and then develop that trust with the riders to take time out of their busy lives to engage with us. I mean, some of the riders tonight have brought up issues that I never would have thought about, but I'm a poverty advocate. I don't think about sports, but other people do, and those issues matter. And it's really encouraging to know that you guys are listening, that you want to help us be a more valuable partner to riders, people who are not engaging in Twitter. They're 70 years old, living in Southeast, and they matter. And those are my clients that I work with in daily basis when they're almost arrested because their fare card goes negative. I really want to make it known today that people of color and people who are in vulnerable populations, that issue matters to me, and I hope to be able to engage the board in valuable conversations. I know many of our partners at the ACLU are working on issues that affect black and brown people and how they are treated in the transit system. And I just really want to be able to engage in that issue, and I hope that it can be part of our work plan. And I want to say that when something goes wrong in a rider's experience, the back to good becomes a joke to them, and we truly can be ambassadors for this system if we can help earn their trust back with Metro by having a meaningful collaboration. And thanks for being here and for being a part of this dialogue.
Thank you. Concur.
Thank you.
You okay then?
Okay. One question I have for the two of y'all that will be related to some of the other people in the room, including Pat. One of our sister committee, the AAC, tends to be pretty useful, to the best of my understanding, at least. You all do a reasonably good job, and what you say is pointed and well considered by the board. There seems to be more of a direct communication between what the board needs and what the AAC can provide. And my, I guess, I don't know if it's a primary question, but one of my questions is, how do we pattern ourselves more like that? What is it that the AAC is doing or has done, or how can we steal many of their best practices so that we can be equally informative on a broader range of topics?
With all respect to Patrick, I think the AAC has an advantage in that it has a very focused mission. It's focused specifically on accessibility. And you all have a broader mission. You sort of have accessibility and everything else. So I think to the extent that your observation that the AAC's output is more focused is probably for that reason. I don't mean to disrespect all the work that Patrick does, I'm sure, in hurting his folks, although it used to be your folks, now it's you're the chair emeritus now. But I think that gives the AAC in a certain sense an advantage.
I was going to say quality of the leadership. But, you know.
Although you're making it very difficult for Patrick to
like
hear.
Pat, did you?
Yeah, I'd like to say one thing. Ooh, that isn't my mic. I think that, and this is from the AAC side, you're correct. I mean, the accessibility piece is an easy piece to focus on. We do have the ability to work and look at things in a more operational sense than the RAC does. We look at vehicles. We look at how the stairs are set, what the access issues are with the doors and steps and lighting, and those things are easy to measure. But I would say that, and I've been on the RAC for 15 years, that the RAC and the AAC work very well together. There is a complement between what the RAC does and what the AAC does, and being able to feed the information back from one committee to the other is extremely important. I've seen that before when it's come to budget issues. I've seen it when we have collaborated on the 7,000 rail car series, the 8,000 rail car series, how we look at the rail stations, what we do with respect to buses and availability. It affects riders in general. And then the AAC has a special focus that we want to see certain accessibility issues come to the forefront and be built into the system from the ground up. communication is very important. We have the same communication needs and desires that the RAC does, but I think that the AAC needs the RAC. It needs the RAC's focus. It needs the RAC's broad policy venue so that what we specialize in applies to everybody. Lighting is a good example. Bus stops, making them accessible, making them more available is another key. And so that when the RAC brings focus to those issues for the general public, we're able to go in and make sure that, oh, by the way, when you design these things, don't forget about X, Y, and Z. So my compliments to the RAC on what they have accomplished, what they do. The relationship between AAC and RAC has always been very good, and it's been special, it's been complimentary, and we appreciate and hope that you know, what works for the RAC is going to work for AAC and vice versa.
All right, there were a few folks who had name tags up who have not yet spoken and have since put those name tags down. I'm looking at my neighbor over here, Bob, wondering if he wants to say anything.
Just a couple things. In terms of communication, it seems to me there are two things that we tend to do in terms of communication to the board. One is we hear rumors or hear proposals that the board is going to take action, and we react to them. The second thing is we come up with our own recommendations, our innovative recommendations from our observation as writers about what needs to be improved. There is, in reference to that, you talked about the committee system. I think that's an interesting place to start. It might be more useful, just an idea, that when we make recommendations or suggestions, that they actually be referred to the appropriate committee for discussion. It's a lot easier dealing with four or five members of that committee, the appropriate committee, than it is trying to get our message across to the entire board and hoping that some of them may read it. The second, I mean, advantage is that relationships do build up over a period of time. You know, if the customer service committee needs to know four or five members of the customer service committee rather than all members of the board, those formal and informal relationships develop, and we get an understanding. So that's one thought of in terms of a structure. The second thing I want to comment on staff. In my relatively short tenure on RAC, we have had four different people who have been our liaison between the board and us. They've all brought different strengths. They've all been here. Each one of them, I can say, has been here for a relatively short period of time. I think, as you mentioned, Chris, you know, if they're here for a short period of time, we really do start all over again with a new staff person. The staff person really has two things they need to do. One is sort of the easy part of it. Make sure there's a room available for the RAC meeting and the committee meetings. Make sure the microphones work. Make sure the, if people want to call in, they can call in. That's sort of a pro forma, formulaic role. The other role is much more important, and that role is doing two things. One is we get a lot of questions here because we're not experts, and we say to the staff person, find out, you have some entree, you have expertise in terms of the organization. You go find out why the buses aren't running on time. You go to the bus division and find out the answer for us so we can then figure out how we want to deal with it. The other thing, of course, is taking forward our recommendations and following through, and that's very important. The person who occupies that position has to be knowledgeable and has to have some juice to get on both those functions. When they go to a department with requests for information, that department person, that employee of WMATA, needs to know that essentially appointees of the board, the RAC, are asking a question, and the board's important. We should get that response. And they also need to be able to go follow through on those things with the board to make sure our recommendations, our reactions are not lost in the shuffle. And again, you need a person who understands the system, and you need some person with juice, influence, expertise, standing. Again, my experience has been
that someone who works for the secretary or the board is more successful in doing that rather than a person who's working for a line department at WMATA. And I understand all the shortages but of time and things like that, but I really think that we need somebody who can navigate for us. You know, we understand the limitations, but I think we need someone senior enough and expert enough and respected enough to do that bidding for us to make it work.
Thank you. I think those are important considerations, and I will say with all due respect, but in all honesty, that in addition to juice, we also want someone who's got the ability to help manage the rack and to triage issues. And I don't know this to be a concern here, but as from Arlington, where we have 46 organizations that advise the board, I can tell you that the best staff coordinators are ones who are able to make sure that questions that bubble up from their commissions are appropriately triaged so that we apply the juice to the ones where we need the juice applied and other ones are funneled to where they need to go. One of the issues that we've seen with some organizations is, with no malintent, it just becomes a part of what people feel is, you know, every question that I have ought to get that same level of attentiveness because we're an advisory body to the board. And what great staff liaisons are able to do is to say, look, you asked a question about why the bus was late this morning. We've got a prescribed mechanism for dealing with that. Let's funnel it there, and let's make sure that we preserve our ability to make things happen for things that are truly going to impact your ability to do your work. I'm not saying that that's an issue here, but I think that's also a key dynamic in the ideal staff person there who can help you be successful, because it's to no one's best interest to have people just look at, oh, the RAC has 25 questions for me today. How am I going to deal with that? We want to have a situation where the appropriate people are responding to questions as seriously and as quickly as they can.
And I just want to say I appreciate your perception that the board corporate secretary and her staff have juice. That was the intention of the board.
All right, so my question as we end this is about next steps and follow-up. What you need from us, what we can expect from you, how to make this happen in April as juicily as possible.
Would love for you all to figure out what's going to be your mechanism for collating feedback and designating a group of whatever size you see fit to work with. It'll probably be the two of us along with Mr. Smedberg and, you know, maybe trying to put a lot of these concepts down on paper. And then, you know, ideally we come to a quick consensus. If not, we work harder. I mean, you know, that's what I foresee happening. But I don't see this as being that difficult. I think, you know, what the framing conversation revealed, we've all pretty much identified what are the problems we're trying to solve. And I think now it's a matter of just the appropriate details.
I would think, the way I see it, I know that there are some of you all who have thought about this and who have come up with some ideas for this. And that would be great to circulate those ideas. I've been writing down some things that occurred to me during this discussion, too, and I would love to sort of mesh all those things together. If you all can designate, I mean, the board sort of designated its people to do the work. You're looking at the two of us here, and Paul Smedberg, if he can break himself free from his council duties. And if you can designate, you know, a roughly equivalent number of people, I think we can probably do a lot of this work circulating information by email and having telephone meetings if we need to and, you know, do as much work as we can prior to your next meeting. I think that's a good way to do it. I'm looking over here at Jennifer because she facilitates all board communications, and I think she would need to be part of this process. And if she's able to do that, she can facilitate that communication. But so, you know, we've got our point people here. If you could designate your point people and, you know, pull together whatever written materials you think you want us to look at, and, you know, I would be happy to add the notes that I've got here and work with that to start with, and then just start, you know, figuring out when we next need to talk. How does that sound?
Sounds fine to me. All right. Well, thank you both very much.
Thank you all.
For the discussion, for coming. I'm not sure we'll have time if we want to continue the operations discussion with our rail folks here, but we would always be happy to take RAC comments either online or afterwards. We're happy to chat. With that.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for the multi-generational RAC meeting tonight. That's always fun to have something out of the ordinary.
Thank you all for indulging. I appreciate it.
So we have somebody here from, I believe it's the Office of Rail Transportation. It's not who's on the agenda, but it is Robert Relia. Okay. So as you, those of you on the RAC may hopefully remember, we did submit recommendations on operator communications as to how those might go. Colin was the spearheader on that one. And Robert is here to provide, I guess, a bit of a response and a little more information about communications procedures.
Yeah, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You kind of got me at a disadvantage. I was one block from my house when I got a phone call saying, turn around and come downtown. So I had a call. I live in Alexandria. I had to call my wife and tell her, you'll see me when you see me. I read through this document that was provided. And to be very honest, I agree with most of everything that's in here. There's just a few issues I think we need for everybody to understand. Number one, the train operator has an awesome responsibility. They have a lot going on up there. They're communicating with Rail OCC. They're responsible for troubleshooting that train if things act up. They're working with the advanced flagmen when we have track people on the tracks. They got to watch their speed. We have to conform to all FTA standards, so they have a lot going on. There's also some limitations with the train. Unfortunately, when a train operator has a malfunction in the train and they leave the cab, they do what we say, key the train down, which basically turns everything off on the train except for the radios, I mean the lights and stuff, which means that operator has no communications to the customers. There is no longer any PA system or intercom system working in that train. So that is a very big disadvantage for the train operator. I read through this. I agree with most of it. I think we have to improve how we communicate. One of the things that caught my eye in this was the use of the word momentarily. And I actually agree with that because when I'm on the train, I hate to hear that myself. But I can tell you where that came from. A lot of times we were getting complaints. Some individuals would call in and said, the train operator said we're going to hold for 5 minutes. Well, we held for 8 minutes. Why can't you get your number straight? So we kind of went to the momentarily, which is not the best way. What we're trying to do is develop a way of telling our operators to give the best information they have. You know, we're going to be holding here for several minutes. You know, there's a track issue, there's a police issue, whatever might be happening, so that the customers on the train have a full understanding of what's going on. The other thing that caught my eye is at the end of the line, I agree we need to make better announcements, but the issue of flashing lights, that's very controversial, believe it or not. We've had complaints from the ADA community. They do not want us flashing lights because they're saying some of their people in their community, it affects them. They don't want the lights flashing. People who might be sight impaired do not like it. We have been doing it at the places such as Willie Avenue, Grosvenor, Mount Vernon, where we're going into the pocket track, but that's something we need to work through. We need to come to a consensus across the board. Do we flash the lights or do we not flash the lights? I'm neutral on the issue. I could go either way as far as that's concerned. So that's, I see Ms. King and Ms. West are the two people who have been working on this. They do most of our communications. And I could tell they had a lot of input in this just by reading it. It sounds something like Allison would say quite a bit. So, like I said, I think we have a very, very good document here. And this was the first time I read it when I was sitting over there. I read through it. I think a lot of the points in here can be implemented. And I totally agree, we are very lacking sometimes in getting communications across to our customers. I've been on trains myself that come to a stop, and I don't hear any announcements. And a lot of times I have a radio, so I know what's going on. But it bothers me, and I'll punch up the intercom and tell the operator, hey, let people know what's happening, to kind of give them a heads up what's taking place. So these are issues, and I totally agree, and we're going to do everything we can to improve these issues. The 7000s have automated announcements. For the most part, they work. There are some glitches in it occasionally, but I think for the most part, they work. The 8000 series trains, which I'm on a committee working on that, will even have a more robust announcement system. So we are looking at ways to go to an automated system to make it even better for the customers. And like I said, don't beat me up too much because you got me at a disadvantage. But
all right. Going in order as usual, starting with Colin.
Well, thank you for making the last-minute turnaround to be here with us, and I appreciate, you know, the fact that you've clearly given this, you know, a thorough read and a thoughtful response, so thank you for that. And just by way of background here, you know, this was really kind of the brainchild of a RAC member who's no longer with us, but you know, his, you know, the catalyst for this, and I think, you know, an issue that we all sort of share is what we perceive to be, you know, a relative lack of consistency in terms of the communications that riders encounter on a day-to-day basis, but as you alluded to, a need to improve both transparency and expectations for riders, especially when there are delays. And I think, you know, we certainly understand the fact that the operators have a whole host of responsibilities and certain, you know, limitations that prevent them from being able to provide, you know, a wholly accurate estimate of how long we'll be holding. But, you know, I think one thing that we tried to outline in here is the fact that there's a need to improve trust among riders in this agency as a whole. And I think riders are going to be responsive to as much information as can be provided. So even if it's an explanation of here's the issue that we're encountering, rather than simply saying, you know, we'll be holding here, and leaving it at that for, you know, riders to sit and wonder. I think, you know, that's really kind of what we're after here is solutions that move us more in the direction of transparency, trust, and, you know, certainly just, you know, user friendliness in general. So, you know, as you and your staff work towards those strategies, we would love to, you know, get, you know, some of your, you know, more detailed thinking on how to tackle these issues. And if there are opportunities for us to engage with you as you think through some of that, you know, we're happy to do so.
Yes, thank you for those comments, because I agree with it. Just for everybody's information, I'm the director of rail station train operations, and that's approximately 1,350 employees. And to get everybody on the same page, shall we say, is a challenge. We are working on it. We are trying to come up with more standard type of announcements. And I agree that we need to be truthful in what we're saying. I've been with WMATA over 40 years, and I can recall years ago, we would never say certain things to the customers. If someone was struck by a train or there was a fire or a derailment, we would never say it. We'd make up some story as to what was going on. We've gotten away from that. We are now saying that it's a police situation, it's a track problem, you know, it's a medical emergency. So we are trying to become more transparent, because I agree with you. If I'm sitting on a beltway in bumper-to-bumper traffic, I'm very frustrated. But if I hear on the radio a tractor-trailer jackknife, I may not like it, but at least I know what's going on. Right.
And you can figure out how long more of this might be. Thank you. Do I have to get out of here, or is it the next?
Okay. Continuing around the room and prioritizing those who haven't spoken yet, I will go to Will.
Okay, turning mine on. All right, thanks, Robert.
This, I don't know if you have any idea as far as this might be concerned, but with the automated announcements, most of them, of course, are generally in English. And, of course, this is an international city, per se, or region. Is there any, I guess, plans to advance in the 8000 series as far as, you know, putting more Spanish into the announcements?
We're looking at everything. That's easier to do in the stations. Remember, the train comes into a station. It's only in that station for a certain length of time. And if you give a full announcement in English, then give a full announcement in Spanish, and then who knows what else they may request, that train is sitting there for an excessive amount of time, which affects the schedule of the system. We are looking at it. That's one of the things that have been discussed. What the final outlook's going to be, I don't know at this time. But I know in the stations, if you've listened in the stations, we have been given announcements both in English and in Spanish, especially for the big events taking place when there's something. A good example is this march that's going to happen on March 24th. We're going to begin making announcements of both English and Spanish as to what's going to be taking place that day.
Lorraine is next.
Hi. I have an issue regarding the automated announcements, and I don't know if this is mechanics or is it the conductor not pressing the right buttons or whatever it is. Okay, but several occasions, let's just say several because I, you know, being on the 7,000 cars, it has happened that the announcements are saying totally wrong information at the point that the train is going in one direction and the announcements is sending the train in the opposite direction. And a lot of people that come in sort of all of a sudden, what did he say? What, am I in the wrong train? And, you know, that's the kind of situation that's happens, has happened on several occasions I'm trying to be here. Is that something that's common on the 7,000, or is this something mechanical, or is it something, like I said, it might be that they're pressing the wrong button. I don't know.
Okay, a couple things. Number one, we don't have conductors. We got operators. New York has conductors. We have operators. I wish we did at times. It would make life easier. As far as the problem, it could be a combination of things. Combination of the operator hitting the wrong button, combination of a mechanical or computer making a mistake. So it's a combination of issues. We are aware of the problem. I do not know the engineering fix. I know our engineering department is looking at that to try to work with Kamisaki, who is the manufacturer of the 7000s, to try to fix the problem. Exactly what's causing it, I really don't have a full answer for that, but I am aware of the problem.
Thanks again for joining us. My question is, so in addition to, I guess, the occasional lack of information or the discrepancy in information, lack of transparency that's given to riders in, by the operators, another thing that I've noticed and that, you know, fellow constituents, I guess, if people have told me that's bugged them is sort of a wide discrepancy in the style in which announcements are made. You know, occasionally you'll hear, you know, operators who will speak too fast, right, or will speak too quietly, or, you know, on the flip side, you know, speak in, you know, such a loud way that it actually disturbs people. And, you know, you'll get operators who are extremely friendly, extremely talkative, and then sometimes, you'll see the opposite. And obviously there's a difference in, you know, people's personalities, and we should be encouraging operators to, express themselves and, you know, however, express their personalities in whichever way they see fit, of course. But it is also important to have some sort of consistency in that respect. So I guess my question to you is what type of training exists, what type of training exists for operators, teach them how to make those announcements properly. And I guess B, what type of methods are currently used to gauge or measure the quality of those announcements? You know, do you sort of do tests or inspections to make sure that operators are making those announcements consistently? And thank you.
Okay, answer the first part. They are, when they go through the initial operator training and their two-year refresher training, they do go through an announcement course where they're told how they're supposed to make announcements, proper speaking. And I agree with you. I've been on trains where sometimes it sounded like the operator swallowed the mic and you could barely understand them, and other trains that'll blow you out of their seat because it's so loud. Some of that is mechanical. The adjustment of the volume in the speaker system sometimes is out of whack, and it causes that problem. So we do training, and that is part of their training. As far as follow-up, the second part, on a typical day, I'll have approximately 15, 16 supervisors in the system, and part of their job is to ride the trains, monitor the operators, listen to the announcements, as well as handle any kind of breakdowns, customer issues, emergencies, or what have you. So they are out there, but take the number of trains. I only have 15 supervisors. They may not hit them all. And then a lot of times, an operator will see a supervisor, and they do everything by the book perfectly because they see the supervisor. What we have been doing is we've been putting supervisors out there in plain clothes. We'll take a supervisor and say, when you come to work tomorrow, do not wear your uniform. Do not, you know, wear your safety vest. Go out and tell us what you find. So we have started that program. So we're finding that we see a lot more discrepancies when they're in plain clothes. You know, it's just like when I'm out there, some operators know me right away. Other ones do not. And I could catch a lot more things sometimes than the supervisor could catch. So we are looking at ways to improve our supervision. And we have asked for more staffing of supervisors. We have had it approved, but in addition to giving us more staff, and they also gave us more responsibility, so it's kind of a wash, but we are working on the problem. And they are monitored. In addition to that, QA is out there, our quality assurance, and they do monitoring of it. And when they see a discrepancy, they write what we call a QA check, and that's sent to the divisions, and then the divisions have to follow up with the operator or station manager, depending on which one they saw. And it could involve, you know, retraining, could involve talking to them, or could involve discipline if it's serious enough. And they also forward the good stuff. If they see things going very well, we get that information also.
All right. Bob.
Just one thing. I know Colin mentioned the his interest. And I share about one or two of us or several of those of us who are interested in meeting with some of your staff to go over these recommendations in detail. I was wondering if you could explore that possibility and see if it could happen.
Yes. Ms. Hall, I see, is the one who's been working on this. And I could talk to Ms. Hall. Well, I won't have a chance tomorrow, but I will talk to her on Friday and bring that to her attention, that if we could set up some sort of meeting between the staffing and personnel from this committee, that we could sit down and kind of hash out and get a better understanding of what you are looking for, and we could explain what our limitations are, what we could provide. So, yes, that is a very doable thing.
Yeah, and we're never, you know, we don't mind being told bad news, you know, that it's a stupid idea. At least I don't feel that way. But we do want to be able to engage with you. The second thing is, this is a document that went through the board and then came to your division. And as you probably heard, you sat through a lot of this discussion with the two board members better communication between the RAC and members of the board and so forth. We would also, I think, appreciate, after you've met with us, again, have a written response back to the board to us on this document.
Yes, I could do that. And I, like I said, I apologize. This is the first time I've seen this document. And so,
I'm not picking on the least bit. I understand.
Yeah. Now, I will forward a response to Mr. Joe Leader, who in turn will bring it up to the board and Mr. Winterfield. So I will write something up as far as my take on this. Like I said, I think this is an excellent document. I think a vast majority of this is very, very doable. So whoever put this together did a good job. When is your next meeting?
The first Wednesday of April, which would be the somewhere between April 1 and April 7.
Okay, what I will do is I'll get something. I'm getting ready to go on vacation, and I'll be in the Bahamas, so I'm, no offense, I'm not going to be thinking about this, but but I will put something together, and I will get it to Mr. Leader, and I will talk to Allison, so you will have some sort of response by the next meeting. I will work on that.
And our next meeting is Wednesday, April 4th.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I turn my phone off.
Joe.
Okay, so my question builds off Will's and something you mentioned earlier about just it being a global city, but communication in multiple languages, including American Sign Language. I know right by Noma Gayudeta's University, we're the world's only university designed for specifically for persons who are deaf or hard of hearing. And so especially in the 8,000 and 7,000 series, are there any priorities made to ensure that all people have communications in a way that, you know, that's accessible to their needs? And also two other things. Delayed, we all know what ARR is, has arrived, right, or arriving, but DLY, delayed, yeah, like, can you explain that and why that's there, and if there's a more accurate, more precise way of communicating where the train is? Because whenever people see delay, DLY, some people don't know what it is, other people are just wondering how long am I going to have to wait here. And finally, to the point that you mentioned earlier about the lights, there's a lot of construction going on, and normally we stop at Ballston, MU, and whenever we stop there, the lights on the track, not on the tracks, but in the train, the conductor or the operator flashes a light inside the train so that it's hard for people to, like, navigate within the train to get out. I know it's a way for him to or her to say, get out of the train, get out of the train. This is the last stop, to get out of the train. But one time, there was a lady that was almost, I don't know if she had, was extra sensitive, but she almost had a seizure almost because of that. And so you rightly point out that that is an issue. So I'm wondering what can be done to make sure that that type of thing doesn't happen, because it's kind of annoying, but also important for those who have those sensory.
A couple things. The operator flashing the light is something we need to work on. We got to come to some sort of conclusion on that. What it is, I don't know. The other thing is sometimes the train's lights will flash on their own, and the reason for that is if you look at the right-of-way, you'll see the third rail, and the third rail has certain gaps. If a train goes to those gaps and it's at a little slower speed, what happens is the motor generator times out. It'll cause the lights to flicker until it hits the next section of the third rail. That's why occasionally sometimes you will see the lights flash even when the train is moving, or if the third rail switches sides. It goes from the left side to the right side. It will sometimes happen. So it just depends on the train. And
so that's unavoidable.
Some of it is unavoidable, yes. Some of it is unavoidable. But not all of it. I'd say a vast majority is avoidable.
Okay.
So we need to look at that. And
okay.
And I have talked to some people in our Metro Access program to try to get their input on what they think we should really do about these lights, to come up with some guidance one way or the other of what is the correct way, because I don't know, and we need to come up with something.
And in terms of ASL, American Sign Language, and delayed, how about those two?
The delay indication, it's a matter of characters that could be displayed. You talked about on the PID side.
Yeah. Can it be like 8 plus or? No, like I need a number, like a 10 plus or like a, you know, range, or I don't know, something more precise than an ambiguous delay.
Sometimes we don't know what the delay is. You got to remember when an incident happens, take the last unfortunate incident I was at the scene when someone was struck by a train.
Okay.
Initially, we figured it was going to be a huge, long delay, but the person was alive, the fire department rescued them,
sure.
So it became a very quick delay. I have been on other situations where we thought we were dealing with problem A, and halfway through we realized it was really problem B, and the delay went completely out the window.
Absolutely.
So sometimes it's very difficult to give a number. It really is in the very beginning, because there's so much information pouring into the control center, both from the train operator, from car equipment, if it's a public incident, from the fire department, police department, that sometimes it's very difficult to get an exact number, especially in the very beginning of the delay.
As long as it's not abused or there's transparency to the people on the platform that, hey, we're delayed for X, Y, and Z, that way they know what you know.
Right. Once we get a better handle on it, they do start making announcements in the station. But sometimes that could take a few minutes, and I know standing on a platform or on a stopped train, a few minutes could seem like an eternity, so I understand that.
ASL? Any chances of that being on the monitors for 7,000, 8,000, or if that's even useful? I guess you said you would consult with the accessibility. Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Taking into consideration that it is about 8:28, we've got Cisa and Rebecca, so feel free to ask your last questions, and then you're, or not. Oh, well, that's simple. Then Rebecca.
We will try to utilize as many resources as we can. So, yes, thank you.
Thank you, especially for coming back. We strongly recommend that you take some cookies or broccoli. But
no, I got to go home and eat dinner. But hopefully my wife saved me some.
Take the cookies for afterwards.
Okay, well, thank you for having me, and keep up the good work.
Have a good vacation.
Enjoy
thank
the Bahamas.
You. Trust me, I won't.
Now that's transparent.
I have one last comment before.
R-E-A. First name, Robert.
R-E-L-Y-E-A for the last name. One last comment before we go, a very short Terrence report. Initially, we had intended that there would be a happy hour with Joy this Friday, but she will not be able to be there, so we will reschedule it for sometime later, March or April, so keep an eye out for that. Feel free to show up and, you know, have your own happy hour on Friday, but don't expect it to be a rack happy hour. With that, we are adjourned.